Sometimes hearing familiar words in a different way puts a different spin on them. We know those words that Colleen just read as part of our language and our reality. It's the Sermon on the Mount. It's the love your enemies bit. But we know that that is not always what happens in the world. What the reality is here and now. We live in the meantime, and frankly, a lot of Christians say, yeah, that's nice and all, but in due time. Right now, it's here. And that's one of our distinct is that we say, no, this is now, to the best of our ability. And we want to live this here. So with that in mind, I want to connect that on here with James and his conversation about patience. A quick note before I dive right in. You may well hold your manuscripts even more loosely than you normally do, because I am conscious of the time, so I will try to just sort of move right along. This is James chapter 5, verses 7 through 12, also as rendered by the Message. Meanwhile, friends, wait patiently for the master's arrival. You see, farmers do this all the time, waiting for their volume of crops to mature, patiently letting the rain do its slow but sure work. Be patient with that. Stay steady and strong. The master could arrive at any time. Friends, don't complain about each other. A far greater complaint would be lodged against you know, and the judge is standing just around the corner. Take the old prophets as your mentors. They put up with anything, went through everything, and never once quit, all the time honoring God. What a gift life is to those who stay the course. You've heard, of course, of Job's staying power. And you know that God brought it all together in the end for him. That's because God cares right down to the last detail. And since you know that he cares, let your language show it too. Don't add words like, I swear to God, to your own words. And don't concoct your own impatience by concocting oaths or hurry up God. Say yes, say no, and just say what's true. That way your language cannot be used against you. To a degree far greater than I think we really realize, our lives are shaped on and by that which we wait on. If you need proof, think about your childhood and the song of, you better not shout, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why, Santa Claus is coming to town. What better reason to straighten up and fly right than the threat of having coal in your stocking? You're waiting on Christmas. And in the changing, it comes. What we know we wait on changes us. About 10 years ago, I happened to be on sabbatical about the same time that my uncle was dying from brain cancer. And that gave me the liberty to say yes when he asked me to do something very peculiar. I want to attend my own funeral. Bryce, could you come and conduct my funeral? It was the first time that the person of honor was sitting in the front row. And it was particular and odd. And over the time that we were preparing for this thing, as striking what his priorities were. They're fairly contradictory, really. And I ended up spending several weeks in Lancaster and just helping out and whatnot. And he wanted to do two things. Could you make sure that the butterfly bush got transplanted? Go out and cut wood so there's plenty for winter. A winter that he knew he wouldn't see. And see how many of my siblings can come and visit before it's time. All of a sudden, things got fairly specific. Get through the to-do list, often the stuff that was long overdue. Made sure that everything was taken care of. And say goodbye. It wasn't some sort of grandiose, bucket list sort of thing. Waiting made everything else important. And all the other stuff just sort of falls away. What we wait on shapes us profoundly. Not that we enjoy the waiting. Not that we enjoy the meantime between already and not yet. Because waiting is a state where we know implicitly or explicitly that there is something coming, but it's not there yet. Theologian Paul Tillich wrote, "Although waiting is not having, it's also having. The fact that we wait for something shows that in some way we already possess it. Waiting, says Tillich, anticipates that which is not yet real. If we wait in hope and patience, the power of that for which we wait is already effective within us. Those who wait, in an ultimate sense, are not that far from that which they wait on. Things are happening already, but it's something that we're waiting already. I can illustrate this by way of remembering what happens when it's time to move. When we were getting ready to move from Winnipeg, we knew that both the logistics of how we were going to do this and also the simple fact of the border meant that nothing that was edible was going to come with us. So we started delving into the back reaches of the freezer, where all the stuff that you buy with every good intention and never use lives. And you end up having some very, let's say, crunchy and eclectic meals just because it's either eat it or throw it away. And we ended up giving it a lot away too. We knew the move wasn't here yet, but it was already shaping what we were doing. And it was there. When we wait, and all that we wait on, especially in these days, we're shaped in the waiting. For good and bad, for ease or ill. As I remarked at the beginning, it's kind of impressive to think, wow, 18 months without Sunday school. That's a long time. 18 months doing anything is a long time. 18 months of pandemic is even longer. Especially when, even just a few weeks ago, we had hoped and prayed and expected, maybe it's all over. So how do we keep waiting when we're just so utterly sick of it? And that's where patience comes in. And speaking entirely personally, it's not a strong point. We're not people who wait, because we're people who do and get done and have power to make it happen. Our culture is that of instant gratification. What we once have regretted as taking time, communication, cooking, transportation, all the rest now seems unbearably long if it's less than an instant. You want it now, if not sooner. And the same is true in our spiritual lives. We would just as soon want to regain the Eden that we lost now. Bring about the kingdom now. Remake the world now. End the suffering of those around us now. And sometimes we're impatient for the project to complete itself. Because you see a world groaning in the pangs of the way things are, and we wonder what is next. Yet, even in our impatience, we're invited into something new. Part of why we're impatient is because, well, patience just seems so passive. Another. And if you're just being patient, well, aren't you pulling yourself up by your own bootstraps? Have you done everything that you possibly can do to expedite the process? And again, I think we also bring this to our spirituality. I've heard us wondering from time and again if, well, with the way things are, surely any day now the Lord will come. We wait for God to act and to answer prayers, or for ourselves to understand the answers that we've already received and just not realized it yet. And to heal the nations and to remedy the pain, and it's the endless list of those things of wondering where is God, and why is God? The discipline of patience is also one of these things where when you talk to somebody who is struggling with faith, they'll often point to, well, but isn't there a schedule? Isn't there a time? Why not now? And of course, there is no good answer to that, except to say, because God's not ready yet. And God is still working, whether or not we necessarily recognize it at the time. But in our patience, we're called to remind ourselves that we are shaped by that patience by that work for which we wait. We wait on the kingdom coming. We wait on the kingdom now. We wait on the completion of all things. And in waiting, we are shaped by the kingdom, by the Lord on which we wait, on the faithfulness in which we see. That doesn't mean that we don't lose patience. That doesn't mean that we don't struggle along the way. That's why we need our stories of faithfulness in our lives and the lives of others in order to maintain the rootedness in the hope and the reality of God's transformation. Our patience is much less about simply waiting around until all things come together in God's good time, but also simply about waiting and being formed by what waits. And as we wait, we need to be patient with ourselves, with our other people, and also with God. And those three things are not easy. And that's why this is a discipline. It's a practice. And it takes perseverance. And takes a way of simply maintaining hope. I want to touch briefly on all three of those areas. And let me rephrase them. We need to have patience with others, with God, and with ourselves. We most readily understand patience with others, because who else are you going to be impatient with than the others in your life? If you live in a household of more than one, you understand that marriage is as much a discipline of patience and perseverance as it is love and happiness. Because the buttons will get pushed, the things will happen, and on it goes. And love is about more disconnecting and keeping on showing up than it is necessarily ignoring it all and thinking that it's happy. And we patiently grow into the people and the connections that we want to be. It's true in our intimate relationships, but also it's true in our body, the body of Christ, and the body beyond that. Patience with God is harder still because, frankly, it's one of those things that sounds just that little bit heretical. Because one of the articles of faith is that God will, in God's good time, do what God will do. And then we sit and we wonder, okay, what precisely is up with God's watch? Why can't the phone call come now? Why can't the answer come now? Why can't relief come now? And we can get frustrated along the way. And we need to be patient in how we wait on the Lord. But the greatest area where we do need patience is, frankly, with ourselves. It's the hardest of all. Because I know in myself, I know those areas where the kingdom is yet to come. I know those areas where the idea of loving my enemies simply just does not work. I know those areas where I would just as soon move on to what's next beyond what's here. We struggle to fathom how that which we hate in ourselves could ever be used by God, could ever be accepted by God, let alone loved. We need to be reminded that God's love is unconditional, which is a far harder concept to actually grasp than one might think. Because nothing in our world is unconditional. Everything has fine print. Everything has failure. But God's love does not. Patience with ourselves lives into that unconditional love by simply saying, if there is that in the universe that can love even me, maybe I, inside, can keep loving myself too. Our self-patience is manifested in a willingness to extend grace even to ourselves, even when we feel least graceful. It blossoms when we can honestly see our failings and know them fully and turn them over to God's good work, even when we see our work in spite of them. And it bears fruit through the perseverance as we learn the hard lessons of life and bring ourselves more into the kingdom. I think patience is a spiritual virtue, not because it shows that you're spiritual, but simply that the spiritual life demands that you be patient. That you wait. That you wonder. And that in the waiting, you are shaped. And in the shaping, you are changed. And in the changing, the kingdom comes on earth as it is in heaven. May it be so, whether we're patient or not.